All right. Welcome back to the Game Trail Podcast. I've got a guest on today. He's a gentleman that I've met, I believe, at TAC a few years ago. And so I wanted to catch up. So we've got Weston MacArthur. Did I get your name right?
Yes, sir.
Gotcha. So I got Weston on. Weston is a Utah guy, and he had a couple of decent tags this year. So I wanted to talk to him about his hunting season. Just wanted to catch up on his brand. So he runs an Instagram page called Rise and Shed, which I've been aware of for a while. I don't know how long I've been following you, but I've been aware of it for quite a while. So I wanted to kind of find out what your page is about and kind of what your brand is about. So I just wanted to catch up. And then I think we have a mutual friend in Knighton.
Yep. And, absolutely.
Yeah. And he's been on my podcast before. And, I really like doing podcasts with guys that, I feel like are just out getting it after it for like the pure love of it. And,
you thinking of me.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So that's one of the reasons I wanted to have you on. But before I dive in and we get to know you a little bit better, I do have to hit promo code. So if you guys want to use the promo code Game Trail when you sign up, that's GAMETRAIL. You can sign up for a Go Hunt Insider account. And if you do that, we're going to give you $50 back in the Go Hunt gear shop. Also, this is a brand new one. We talked a little bit about on the other Big Hunt Guys podcast that we did yesterday. It was released today. But we have this promo. If you guys want to sign up for friends with your account, so your email, up until January 24th, for every four guys you sign up, we're going to give you $1,000 back in the Go Hunt gear shop. So $1,000 that you can use towards the purchase of any gear that you want in the shop, which is a pretty crazy deal. I talked about it on our other podcast, but when they told me it was going to be $1,000 for every four people that you signed up, my jaw hit the floor. I was like, $1,000 is real money. So pretty wild. And then shout out to Matthew's Archery. Those guys are kind enough to sponsor my little project podcast. So I appreciate those guys being a partner of mine and just make great bows. And I've been shooting Vegas rounds. I got a new target bow, Weston. I got a Title 38 all set up. I was able to convince those guys to send me a bow, and I've got that thing set up, and I've been shooting Vegas rounds in my basement at 12 yards, at least probably three or four games a day now. So
dang, got to get those reps in.
Yeah, man. It's good. I don't know if I should say this because my boss will probably hear this, but I've been shooting lots of arrows. Anytime I get up to take a break, use the bathroom, go get some lunch, anything like that, I'm shooting arrows. So
I don't see a problem in that, though.
Me either, personally. Yeah. So how you been, man?
Doing good, man. Actually, just got back in after a chucker hunt. Went out and filmed my buddies earlier this morning and just got home from that and ready to do the podcast now.
Did you get any chuckers?
No, actually we did not. My one buddy missed once and the other missed 13 times. So yeah, it was a good time.
They're hard to hit, huh?
Yeah. Oh, they're fast little buggers. Absolutely.
Yeah. They are dang hard to hit. I used to work this job. I was doing like oil and gas biological clearances for like seismic development, like when they would go out and do seismic surveys. And I was working out in Green River one summer, and like in my downtime, because I was staying out there for months at a time, I would take the old shotgun and we'd go for a walk and try to kill chuckers, but I could never hit them. I'm not a great shot with a shotgun as it is, but man, a chucker's even that much harder. So,
well, I can't really talk smack because I only got 3 shots out of the 13 really good on film. Everything else was a little bit late or it's out of focus. Mm-hmm. So I was just like, yeah, that's my first time actually trying to do a chucker hunt with a camera. So I'm experimenting this year. Right. I have a lot of different plans that I have in store this year. And that's definitely one thing, is trying new experiences.
Mm-hmm.
So I was kind of successful and kind of not, but I did catch a buddy eating shit so hard today. So we got that.
I'd say that's a win.
Absolutely. If I didn't get the birds, I at least got him. It's some type of content. So it's good.
I know guys that are just fanatical about chucker hunting. Mm-hmm. You know, they absolutely love it just for just like you're saying, kind of the adventure side of it. Get out and do a lot of hiking. You get in good shape for the hunting season, you know, see some birds, do some shooting. Yep. Do you have a dog?
I do not. I mean, I grew up with dogs, but I do not have a dog right now.
Is that on the list? You going to get you a bird dog?
The list first is buy a house. We're actually just renting an apartment right now.
Okay.
But that's first on the list, is buy a house. And then, yes, I would love to have a dog.
Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah. Working dogs are great. Lorenzo just got a new dog, waterfowl dog. He just got it for Christmas, but it's a pup. I think it's like 11 or 12 weeks old, but I've got a dog too, but she's pretty worthless. She just lays here on my my floor in my office, but she doesn't like birds or anything like that. So Tal, where are you from, man? You live in Utah. But...
Yep, I'm from Utah. Originally grew up West Jordan, Utah. And then my wife and I right now, we live in Pleasant Grove, Utah.
Gotcha. So Utah born and raised.
Yep. And then actually went down to school at Dixie State back when it was called Dixie State.
Yeah.
And so.
Yeah, yep. I went there too for a couple of years.
Nice. It's a fun place. Let's put it that way.
Did you did you do 4 years down there? Or was it a 4-year school when you were there?
Yeah, it actually was, but I did not do 4 years. Mm-hmm. I did more like, I think it was 2.5, but I feel like I did a lot more of socializing and partying than I did actual schoolwork. So
it's a perfect climate for that, isn't it? In the winter. Oh,
I love it. And plus my wife is actually from Santa Clara, so she's from down there. And eventually I would love to move back because I hate the snow. I hate the snow.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, and I love the heat. So if we move back there, that would be awesome. And I know she loves it down there. So kind of goals for the future.
I hate the heat. And I'm like caught somewhere in between because I was always the guy who's like, look at these snowbirds, you know, going south for the winter. And they all end up there in St. George camping out. And I was like, I don't get that. I like the cold weather and the snow. But the older I've gotten, the less I like the cold. But I really don't like the heat either. So I'm like caught somewhere in between.
If it's sunny in 75, I can just call it good. That's my happy place.
Yeah. No, I get you. So did you grow up hunting?
Yes, actually, I did. My biological father actually was a pheasant guide, so I did a lot of upland game growing up, and then my stepfather was huge into big game, and both of them did fishing and all that stuff, but I actually lived with my stepfather and my mother. My stepfather is actually, he's dad, you know, he's the guy that has raised me into the man that I am today. He is the man that has been there for every event of my life. Like he's my hero. So, you know, it's kind of cool that I got both backgrounds though, growing up. And then, I guess kind of to dive into what Rise and Shed is. So with every sale at my website, I donate $1 to the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. So a little backstory, when I was 17, my biological father actually committed suicide. And so I've always had to obviously deal with that ever since. And I am, you know, I have a big heart. I love giving back. That's what makes me feel complete and whole. That's what makes me, you know, feel really good about myself. And I feel that is what kind of life is all about, is helping others, loving each other, and just doing what we can and doing our best. So a little backstory into that. So I got the name Rise and Shed actually from my mom. She actually every morning was Rise and Shine.
Yeah.
And since I loved, you know, doing shed hunting and stuff, just turned it into Rise and Shed. And honestly, there's definitely days that it's like, why did I choose this name? Because I don't like to be really niched down into the shed hunting community, just because I do want to be, you know, just a Swiss Army knife of outdoor activities, you know?
Yep.
So yeah, did that. And before I did Rise and Shed, I did cell phone towers. Did that for, I think, 6 years of my life. And then we actually had a cell phone tower catch on fire. My stepfather and I created a business, had a couple buddies working. And one day we had a welder come tack weld a collar onto the base of the tower. And he had left, been sitting around for like 45 minutes starting to clean up. And all of a sudden the tower caught on fire. And we literally, if you know Bangor Highway and about 4100 South, there's a Life Church right there. We shut down Bangor for many hours. It was on the news and all that stuff. So it was not a good deal. Yeah. And especially in that industry, when you have something like that happen, you're kind of done. So that ruined our whole business. And we had been growing that for about 3 years. And we were really starting to kick ass and take names. And I really thought... cell phone towers was going to be my profession, you know, for the rest of my life. So kind of blessing in disguise, I guess you could say, because it came back, we had to go to court for it and we came back that we actually won the case. But after 5 years, life has moved on, man.
Yeah.
So
Man, that's wild. I had no idea.
Yep. And then right after that, I did excavation and did that for about a year and a half. And so I grew up blue collar.
Yeah.
But there was one day, so I started my YouTube channel back in 2016. I just saw other people filming their shed hunts and their adventures. And I was just thinking, man, I love doing the same things. Maybe people might want to watch what I got going on.
Sure.
And, you know, over time, yeah, it grew. Like, people started asking for apparel. People started, you know, wanting to get out on hikes and stuff. So I was kind of just blown away. And so I was doing that for about a year and a half. And I will never forget this. I had been thinking about going full time with Rise and Shed for about 6 months, really hard. And my wife and I kind of came to an agreement. If we can save this amount of money, go full time. Let's see what happens with it. And so we finally reached that financial goal. And I was debating for a couple months after we had reached that financial goal, because, dude, it's like, it's nerve wracking. It's for betting on yourself, you know, like that's my family. That's my whole income, you know? Yeah. So definitely had to talk some things out, but it was one day I will never forget, 16 hour shift, working in literal human piss and shit. A bore company had gone through a fiber optic line and I was standing in human caca. And I just told myself, like, I'm better than this. Like, I'm meant to do something better than sitting in this caca. And, you know, like, growing up, you even get told, do what you love.
Yeah.
And the outdoors is what I love. I may not be very good at what I do, but I love doing it. You know, at least I'm having fun. At least I get to create my own schedule. And, you know, like, there's a lot of benefits, but there's also a lot of stuff that if you don't perform, you don't make money. You don't get a paycheck.
It's easier said than done, right?
Absolutely. I mean,
it's like, yeah, you want to do something that you love and be involved like an industry that you feel passionate about, but you also have, you know, house payments and mortgages and wife and kids. And it's really hard, man. And I commend you for making the leap. Cause that's balls, man. It takes balls to do that. Like for real, to jump in and just try it. Yeah. I mean, I think it's super commendable. Yeah, that's awesome. I didn't know all this. Like, I didn't know about your dad and that you gave back, and, you know, part of your sales on your website was to that cause. That's really cool. And I appreciate you sharing it with us.
Like, absolutely.
I had no idea.
Yeah. Well, really, that's kind of really what built the foundation, you know? And plus, nobody draws up an actual book, a playbook to do social media in the outdoor space.
Right.
And that's what's been so much fun, though, is it is a game and you're trying to figure those things out. And I'm proud to say that I'm self-taught on a lot of things. Don't get me wrong. I've had people reach out and I've reached out to people to help me hone the craft. But I can say, like, with filming, editing, doing all those different things, it was just because I'm like, all right, how do I use this? Like, I have to be a master behind the lens if I want to actually continue doing this and getting more jobs and just putting my name out there.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, like, I have a lot of work still to do. I have a lot of just stuff that I need to work on, but I know I'm working on it right now and trying to hone the craft even more, just to get better at what I do. But it is all just trial and error mostly.
Sure.
And that's what a lot of work. Yeah. And a lot of people don't understand. They're like, you're a social media person and you just post and you make money that way. No, like, there's so much more than just posting. And a lot of people, I guarantee, would have a hard time just posting every single day.
Oh,
just
you're
making
looking,
up
you're
some
look,
type
look,
of content.
You're looking at one.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying.
I don't do it. In fact, the other day somebody was giving me shit in the office and they were like, oh, you never post. You know, when's the last time you actually posted? I went back and looked and it was like a year, a month ago. I just don't. Yeah, it's like, I don't know. It's part of it. You have to be committed to it, right? So like, you have to look at it like almost like a job, I guess, you know. But then you also have to be comfortable with putting yourself out there at that level, which not everybody is, you know.
No, absolutely.
And I don't say that with I don't know. I think it's really commendable. I think it's awesome that people that want to do it and they can do it, you know, and they put themselves out there and they're continually driving and looking for good content to put out, because I consume a lot of social media content. I just don't put a lot out myself as far as like my own personal pages, you know?
No, I get you.
Go Hunt, you know, basically when I went on with them, I said, you know, anything that we do here, feel free to post it, you know, go ahead. And somehow I feel fine about them, but like on my own, it feels like a job. So, reality is like, I just don't have a passion for it the way that some people do. And some people do it and they do it, yourself included. I think, you know, I work with Brady. Brady does a really nice job. He's always putting out cool content and photos and video and stuff. And I follow that stuff religiously. And there's a lot of people that do. I think they do an awesome job. I just don't have the passion for it that other people do.
Yeah.
So,
and that's okay.
I commend you for doing it. I appreciate it. I like following it, man. It's fun to follow. It's fun to follow along with people that are out doing stuff. You get like a little bit of a glimpse into, you know, their adventures and the things that they're out there doing. So I think it's awesome that you're doing it.
Well, I appreciate it. And that's what's funny is I never thought of myself as a social media person ever. Sure. My wife is the one that actually got me onto social media. She's like, you need to like just post about stuff. And yeah. I'm like, why? Who cares? Like, why would people want to know what I'm doing? Like, what does it matter? Mm-hmm. So, but it's actually kind of funny how that all happened and how life has gone.
I've always said, you know, I mean, most of us in this day and age, I mean, there's probably 70-80% of us at least that are just stuck behind a desk and we're looking at a computer most of the days. A lot of people are, you know, sorting through spreadsheets and, you know, emails and all that stuff. So a lot of us want to live vicariously through people that are out doing cool stuff. So no, like you went out on a chucker hunt. That's awesome, man. I want to watch that. I want to see, you know, how it went. So I think it's really cool. And I think it's cool that you took the opportunity to find something that you really like and just dive wholeheartedly into it. So is this all you like, is this your job? Like
yep, this is my full-time gig.
You're doing Rise and Shed.
Yep. I'll be doing that. It'll be 7 years in July.
That's awesome.
So very cool. It's definitely been a learning experience and a grind and all those words in between that you could use, but I love it, man. Like I seriously love that I get to wake up and do whatever the hell I want to do.
Right.
But that doesn't go without saying, like, I've put in a lot of sacrifice and so has my family, my wife especially. And we have a little, she'll be three at the end of February, but a little daughter. And it's tough, man. Like being gone away from them, it's tough. Like even if you're gone, even for the 3 days, just a short little trip, it plays with your mind. And I feel that's kind of what this business is too. It's a whole mental game, not more, just physical and you're out in the mountains and doing all those things. But mentally, you have to know that one, you're bringing home the bacon, your family relies on you. You have to be somewhat healthy and, you know, just there's so much that goes into it. And I'm definitely one of those guys that thinks about a lot of just weird different things. I don't know why. And I'm huge into energy and very spiritual in that way. And that's what the mountains are for me though, too. So it's fun. Yes, it is my job. Yes, it is my passion, but I get so much more out of what I actually do than just social media.
Yeah. So let me ask you like along those same lines, how do you, cause I battle a little bit with this. How do you disconnect from work when your passion is your work essentially? So like, I'll give you an example. So like if I go somewhere, you know, if I go socially somewhere, like, we just, you know, we got together with my wife's family, but every time I'm around them, like they want to, you know, they want to talk hunting. They want to find out what I'm doing, where I've hunted. You know, I tell hunting stories. If I go to the gas station, I run into somebody, they want to talk hunting and applications and they want to talk archery. And there's times where I'm just like, man, I really like want to disconnect and just, so do you do anything? Do you have any other hobbies that you kind of pour your time and effort into that you enjoy and like?
Not necessarily. No, I honestly love just hunting, fishing, just being outdoors. And what's funny is my wife loves to go on nature hikes. I can't go on a nature hike. I can't do it, dude. I have to have an end goal.
Me too. I hate walking. Like,
yeah,
I'll go on a hike if I'm looking for a shed, or if I think I'm going to find a mule deer or an elk and I'm looking for, you know, something to do, I will run. Like, I don't mind running. I like running because I'm getting some like exercise out of it, but just to like go take a walk, I hate it.
Mm-hmm. I'm the exact same way, but yeah. No, I wouldn't necessarily say that I have another hobby. Mm-hmm. I guess sports. I love mm-hmm. to just sit down on the couch and rest and just chill out, watch sports.
Yeah.
That was my first passion with sports.
What'd you play? Did you play sport?
Football, baseball, basketball.
Oh man, you did all three.
Yep.
Man. Yeah. That's awesome. Do you, who do you follow? The NBA, NCAA?
Yeah. Utah Jazz definitely has to be the the NBA team. Here's the thing. I am a loyal person. If I have a team I'm a loyal person. So the Utah Jazz is my NBA team. I love the Atlanta Braves in baseball and the Las Vegas Raiders in football.
Oh, there you go.
Yep.
You, so I went to Utah State, right? So my wife and I, we went to Utah State. So we're diehard Aggie fans. And then all my kids, I mean, growing up, we watched sports. My oldest has become, probably due to me, just a diehard Aggie fan. So we've been watching the Aggies, and like, they just broke the top 25. They're 15-1.
Heck
so
yeah.
if you don't have a college team, Weston, you can jump on the bandwagon and be an Aggie fan if you want.
Well, I can do that too, because my wife actually went to Utah State for like a year.
There you go.
Yep.
Love that. There you go. So can we talk about shed hunting?
Absolutely.
How long have you been shed hunting?
So I picked up my first shed when I was like 11, and I remember even asking my dad just, what is this? He goes, it's a shed. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I realize that, but why isn't it on his head? He goes, no, right. Dude, they shed every single year. So I was 11 when I found that out. Never really went after him ever, like after that moment, until I was actually doing towers, was working with my buddy Cam, and he goes, dude, we should go find some sheds. I'm like, you want to just go down to the Home Depot and just go look at some sheds, bud? And he's like, no, some antlers, dumbass. And I'm like, oh, all right. Yeah, let's go try to find some. And no joke, 15 minutes out of our hotel, because Dune Towers, it was a very windy day. So we got shut down and we were out in Wyoming. But 15 minutes from the hotel, went out. I found a little 4-point, literally 100 yards away from the truck. Mm-hmm. And then maybe another 50 yards side by side on top of each other, brown deer sheds, mule deer sheds. Oh, nice. And ever since that moment, I was hooked. Lost my mind, and I think that day we pulled out 36 in a day between just him and I.
That's an epic day.
Yeah, absolutely epic. But that was back in, I think, 2012.
Okay.
So.
Gotcha. So then when you – did you come back to Utah and you kind of start getting into it? And
yep.
Was it – so I did a lot of shed hunting in probably, the early 2000s, I guess. So my brother and I would do a lot. When I went to Utah State, I did it all the time. So I had a job from 3 a.m. till 8 a.m. in the morning. And then I would go to classes. And then as soon as I was done with classes, I'd skin out and I would go hunt. I'd go look for elk sheds. And I paid my car payment when I was going to college, selling elk sheds on eBay.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. So I did that. And back then there were some guys doing it for sure. Like, it was fairly popular, but by like mid 2000s, was it pretty competitive at that point for you?
No, it honestly didn't really get competitive until I would say 2015, 2016. Like when I actually knew that a lot more people were doing that type of stuff. Because, I mean, there was only a select few that were even posting on YouTube at that time that I knew about anyway. But I would say around 2016 is when it kind of all just took off and became a big thing to do shed hunting.
Yeah. How many days a year do you think you get? Shed hunting?
I'd say probably 100.
Oh wow, a lot.
Yeah, I mean, because we do go on trips, but then there's also a whole bunch of little day hikes or half day hikes that we like to do too, just like, oh, let's hurry and hit this little area. So I don't know, maybe 100 is stretching it, but quite a few, because I go pretty hard from, I'd say, February to the end of May.
Okay.
And then even sometimes when there's a cooler summer day, we're out there. We're trying to find some.
Gotcha. Is that, so I think this, I have this perception in hunting, so I'm going to try to extrapolate. So stay with me if you can. But like, I think a lot of people think that there's a really high pressure when it comes to hunting, right? So I sat on this mule deer committee and we talked. One of the major feedback that people gave us for that committee when we were kind of trying to put together a new plan was that they felt like that, you know, pressure was kind of high. It feels like every time you put out a survey, everybody always talks about how high the pressure is in regards to like an opportunity style hunt, whether it's OTC elk in Colorado or, you know, general season deer. And like, I feel the pressure, like I see people, but I've never really felt like there was as much pressure as it seems like most people complain about. Mm-hmm. So I was curious, in regards to shed hunting, is it the same? Is it like, do people have this like misconception that it's really competitive, that there's a lot of people out there, or is there really that many people out there getting after it?
I would say certain areas, there's a lot of people out there getting after it, but mm-hmm. I feel there's a concentration of only a select few areas or units where there's a ton of people. Because okay. I love to get away from the roads and all that. So I hardly ever see anybody out shed hunting. When you have the openers though, the shed openers, yeah, you definitely see a lot more people. But I feel after the first 2 weeks, they start to just really dwindle out.
Gotcha. But
that's my personal opinion.
Yeah. I know guys that are really good shed hunters that are out picking up a lot. And it feels like every single year they're picking up as many or more than they did the previous year. You know, they're just out there picking up sheds all the time. And they're doing it year after year. So I always hear this talk of like, yeah, there's more people than ever. There's more people than ever. And I'm like, yeah, but that guy that I know is continuing every single year to pick up about the same number of sheds or more, mm-hmm. you know? So they're just, I guess they're maybe just that much more dedicated. And I kind of feel the same way about hunting. I feel like, and you know what? Shed hunting's funny, right? Because I think a lot of people think that there's not like, you just go out there and you wander around. Like, oh, I'm just going to pick a spot and I'm going to go wander around. And there is some of that to it, but I definitely know guys, there are people that are better at shed hunting than most people.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Would you agree?
I would agree. I feel one, you have to train your eye for it. I feel mm-hmm. the average person that doesn't really do it, doesn't have as an, pay attention to detail, I guess you could say.
Yep.
And then I do feel the more time and miles and glassing that you do out in the hills, you're going to find more sheds. Yeah. 100%.
It
just comes down to effort.
Yeah. The other thing I would say about guys that I know that are really good shed hunters is they were ultra patient. And I mean, they're good glassers. So they're sitting and they're glassing a hillside. And if you think glassing a hillside for deer is hard, try glassing for a deer shed or an elk shed. Like, you're really picking apart detail on a hillside, right? And so I know that they're really, really patient. And the other thing is the guys that I know that are really good at it, they're sometimes gritting out hillsides in such tight, you know, bands mm-hmm. that it drives me crazy. I would be like, I've looked at this. I've already looked at it. Like, yeah. I've definitely been within close enough proximity. If there was a shed here, I'd have seen it, but they're continually gritting out hillsides, finding sheds that I miss, 'cause I just get bored with it. And I'm like, oh, that ridge looks really cool. I'm going on over there. And I take off. So I think there's a lot of lessons. And I know that like internally here in the office, Lorenzo and Brady sometimes will be like, shed hunting's just like a grown up Easter egg hunt. You know, it's like kind of lame, but I loved it, man. Back when I did a lot of it, I really loved it. And I honestly felt like it made me a better hunter. It definitely made 100%. Me more patient.
I was going to say that.
It made me more, you know, more persistent. It made me more patient. The other thing I think it really does, I'd be curious to know, but I really feel like it helps you put together the entire puzzle for a specific animal. Mm-hmm. Like, I really feel like you can come to understand habitats better, you know, what they're looking for in the winter and what transition looks like and what they do you feel that way?
Absolutely. 100%. I feel you pick up on more of those little things, mm-hmm. like what type of certain vegetation they really like to eat and where they really like to traverse from bedding areas and water and all that stuff. I feel shed hunters pay attention to the little details in mm-hmm. that, because that I was going to say the same thing. Shed hunting has 100% made me a better hunter, because I feel I get to understand that animal a lot more. And mm-hmm. I'm, especially when you're doing a lot of scouting and you're waiting for these antlers to drop off their head, you get to learn about their patterns and what they like to do and if they have certain tendencies. And I've actually noticed a lot of similarities in other states and other units. And so I can take what I've learned here and apply it to other places, and it seems to work out in my favor out there too.
Yeah. You can kind of extrapolate it and learn lessons. And then the other thing is there's, especially with mule deer, I feel like there's always those bucks that just don't move up the hill. They're desert bucks. You know, yep. They live out in the low stuff, and they live there in the summer, and they live there in the winter.
Yep.
And if you can find them in the winter, sometimes you can go back and find them again there in the summer, and then you can hunt them, you know, in September and October and November. So I think, and that's really like, it's a really cool. Have you ever done that? Have you ever found a buck or a bull that you've had a chance to hunt that you picked up sheds?
Not hunt, but there's definitely multiple animals that have been back to the same areas years after year after year.
Yeah. Do you have a shed or, you know, a story, anything like that? Like one that you've like meant a lot to you that you've held on to for some reason that's either big or just has some meaning to you?
I mean, there's definitely a lot of those stories. I have a few that just the people I was with, it was meaningful for that. I definitely keep some big ones just because I feel everybody has to have the some keepers. Yeah, exactly. And then I'm all for the freaks. I love the unique stuff. I love unique stuff. And it's weird because I feel I put out that energy, and I have a lot of unique antlers in my keeper stack. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say I just have one though. Like that one's hard for me because there's been a lot of good memories with a lot of good people. Mm-hmm. So I can't just pick one.
Yeah. I can think back on it. There's always, I'm kind of like you. I don't have like a specific shed, but I have tons of stories of like people who that I was with, you know, and, you know, picking up a shed. I remember one time I was with my brother and we got into some country that hadn't been hit in a number of years. And I think we'd picked up like 26 elk sheds between the two of us. And we were
that's a stellar day.
Oh, it was an amazing day. Right. And we were completely loaded to the hill, and we had a couple of ridges to cross to get back to the truck. And I remember he had so many sheds on his pack that like one would get loose, you know, and like fall off. And he was like, I can't deal with it. And he'd pick it up and chuck it, you know? And I think back on that now, I'm like, there's no horn left behind. Like everything goes out. Right.
Yep.
But I remember him just getting, he got really dehydrated and was cramping up and got super sick. And it was just a gnarly long day. But I remember getting back to the truck and just, you know, having all these sheds. And there's lots of cool stories like that I can think of. And it's fun, man. I really like it.
Well, my favorite part about shed hunting and hunting in general is the camaraderie that you build with whoever you're with. And I know you may be a little bit different. You like to do more solo stuff. I love to actually just have at least one other person with me.
Yeah.
Because I'm a big old sissy. When it comes to like the dark and stuff, I am a big old pussy. I hate it, dude. I hate the dark. And so if I have one person with me, I'm good. But yeah, I feel just building that camaraderie with people and having that same, I feel a lot of the shed hunters I've actually been out with, we think a lot alike. We have the same type of morals and how we feel about animals and just the environment. I don't know. I love just getting back to camp, seeing all the sheds laid out and having the campfire. That is honestly my favorite part, is just seeing everybody's success and then just talking shit to each other. That's my favorite part.
Yeah, man. And what a better time of year, you know, it's like starting to warm a little bit, but you still got those cold mornings and evenings and the green grass is starting to pop. And yeah, I mean, as you're talking, I'm thinking of the exact same situations. I remember going on a camping trip with a buddy and just having a campfire and just picking up sheds and looking at them in the evening and, you know, doing hobo dinners, you know, potatoes and hamburger just and carrots tucked away in tinfoil dinner. Yeah.
I love that stuff.
Yeah, for sure. Me too. Good memories. What do you got any tips? So I had a cousin that reached out to me and she's dating a guy and she was like, hey, my boyfriend, he's interested in kind of getting into shed hunting. you know, do you have any spots for him? And I was just thinking like, man, I mean, I've got some spots, but I was trying to give her some tips and tricks, like ideas on where to look to like get started. So do you have any intel that you would dump off to folks on somebody getting started into shed hunting?
I would say right now, start driving roads. That's the easiest thing you can do. Start driving roads, find the animals, and then start keeping tabs on those animals. You can either hike in. I choose in certain areas just to drive the road and pull out the spotter. Having good glass is very beneficial. I love to get up on vantage points and see as much country as possible. And I am that patient person. We're all sitting in a spot for like a half hour sometimes and just pick everything apart. I will find probably 60% of my sheds from glassing. So I am that patient person. And plus I love just going out and looking at animals anyway. And then if I get to pick up their sheds, I have a little bit of a storyline. And that's also what I love about shed hunting is every antler is unique to yourself. Awesome. Nobody else can ever have that. And I love that aspect.
Yeah. Do you know Tyler Cole? He lives up there.
Yeah. Yeah. You know
Tyler? Yeah. So Tyler was messaging me the other day and he'd watched a YouTube video that I'd done where I did a little shop tour here in my office, just some of the mounts and stuff. And he was like, oh, is this, you know, where did you kill this buck on this unit? Because I have a buck that looks very similar, you know, like similar traits. And then kind of led to us just, we were exchanging text messages and just talking about, man, antlers are so fascinating and it's so funny. And I guarantee you, you've had this conversation with your wife or somebody that's coming to your house, like they'll get into your antler pile and you'll be like, oh, I picked that up on this day in this area. It's this bull or this buck. And you know, everything about it.
Yep.
And everybody else looks at it and they're like, man, I don't get it. They all look the same, right? Like even a basic 4-point buck, you know, I can pick one up out of my pile and be like, oh, I know right where I found that. Because they're just so dang fascinating, man.
And yeah, I agree. I do. Don't get me wrong. Like there's some 2 points that I couldn't tell you where the hell I found that.
Right.
But the ones that are a little bit bigger, significant, or have a little something about them. Oh yeah, absolutely. Like I can give you the exact pin, where it's at, who I found it with. Yeah, 100%.
Isn't that wild?
I love it.
I do too. And I know many people that do. I don't know exactly what that is, but we love antlers. Like people love antlers. I don't know, man. It's kind of crazy. I don't know what it is. It's just, there's some sort of connection, right? With the animal, like that was on their head, you know, that they grew it and lost it. And then I went up and found it like a little treasure hunt, you know?
Absolutely. Well, I even feel that way about hunting animals though, too. True. Even when you take an animal's life, it's like, how many hunters did he actually evade or even predators? What's his life story? Dude, I really do think about that type of stuff all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, I do too. I think that's what's neat about shed hunting too, is because and I bet you've got some animals that you've picked up on multiple years, you know, and you pick it up. It's really cool to see how they've changed or grown or digressed you wonder like, man, where has he been all year? What's he done? You know, I love that stuff too. I totally get it.
See, and I get kind of jealous of the whitetail guys, because especially if you have private property and you know these animals and you have names for them and stuff.
For sure.
I think that is what, like, I would love that if I had probably 4 or 5 years of sheds and then taken year 6 and just a giant, you know, and have that history with him and know exactly where he was, how he was laying. I think that's the ultimate goal, honestly, being a shed hunter and a hunter. Yeah.
Yeah. I agree. What do you do with them? Do you sell them?
I sell some, I make some, I do dog chews, and then random people will hit me up and I'll sell them whatever they want. So, but there are definitely sheds that I will never get rid of. Like those are being either buried with me, or I hope somebody respects them as much as I do and, you know, does something with them.
I have a pile in my garage of just like my keeper pile, you know, and, my family's asked me, what are you going to do with these? And I'm like, I don't know. I guess at some point I'll die and then you'll have to figure out what to do with them, what you want to do with them. Cause I just don't know, but I can't sell some of them. You know, there's some that I just have to keep.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I get that.
Seeing, I've even told Jess, like, kid with her, like, that's Meadows college fund if need be, you know?
Yeah. Like, well,
because I know there's going to be a time and a place where I could part with most of them, you know, but there's definitely some that are probably getting buried with me just because you have that attachment to them.
Yeah. If you're putting that into your kid's college fund, you're doing better than I am. Cause usually what happens to me is I'm like, oh, I need a new bow sight. That would be pretty cool. I don't have any extra money laying around, but I do have some sheds I could probably part with. And so then I part ways and buy a new bow sight. So.
Well, you should see my damn shed pile. I had to rent a storage unit.
And
did
you?
That's where a lot of sheds are. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's some in the house, but there's a lot of them in the shed unit.
One of the most fascinating days I ever had was, I've got a buddy, his dad started shed hunting in the 70s, like 70s and 80s, like got really into it when they were just walking past him. Right. So he was an avid shed hunter. And then his kid, that's my buddy, has been an avid shed hunter. And the only thing that they really ever keep is if it's like really unique, or if it's like 370 plus for a bull, you know, like 190, 180 plus for a buck. And I remember he took me to his dad's house. We walked down into the basement and they had like the entire living room, like to the ceiling.
Damn.
And we started pulling antlers, and it was like the best day of my life. I loved it. I just freaking loved it. It was so cool just to look at, you know, the different sheds. And man, so it's,
well, dude, you need to come out to Shed and Tell.
I've never done it. I've seen it advertised, but I think that's such a cool idea.
Well, and every year we always have a cause that we give back to as well. So that's nice. Like I said, that's my thing. I love giving back, and we've met some awesome individuals, and it's just cool that people want to do that and bring out their keeper piles and share those stories. That's what I actually love about the event more than anything, is just
community.
Everybody's. Yeah, exactly.
So when is that, and where do you guys do it?
So it's in the end of June. That's when we usually have it. And then it'll be at Badass Outdoor Gear again this year.
Right on. Yeah, that would be fun. I'll have to put that on the calendar and see.
Hell yeah, that'd be awesome.
That's awesome. So I wanted to talk, God, I could talk sheds. I forget how much I like shed hunting when I start talking to a shed hunter. Tell me about your season. So I know you had a couple of tags, because I think we talked at Total Archery Challenge in Salt Lake. And I think you had an elk tag, which you had here in Utah, if you're okay with me saying that. I think you probably said it.
Yeah.
How did it go?
Dude, I literally got everything I wanted out of the hunt, except for a dead bull. I definitely could have shot smaller bulls earlier in the hunt, but there was one bull that we seen, I think it was 6 times out of the 10 days that I hunted a certain area. Actually, we started out where you started out.
Okay.
Because we have a cabin down there.
Gotcha.
And we found this bull, and he was just beautiful. And I had never shot an elk with my bow. So I don't know why I was trying to be kind of a trophy hunter in that sense, but I had the time. So I wanted a mature, just big animal that just would, honestly, anything would make me happy, because I'm an opportunist. I love the experience more than anything. But yeah, I wanted my bar was 340. So this one bull that we saw, he's probably mid 350s. And he was just beautiful, 7. And I had, 7 opportunities where we were 60 yards or less. Either the wind screwed us, cows screwed us, or it was too thick. So I never got to shoot one or even pull my bow back. And then, I might have made a mistake on a couple little stalks. And I tried to do silent hunting. I've never had to bugle. I've never had to call. We grew up rifle hunters. I've only had a bow in my hand for the last 5 years. And so I wasn't experienced, I guess you could say, with archery elk hunting.
Yeah.
And But yeah, I had my fun times. We had a lot of rut activity because we actually ended the hunt on the north end of the unit.
Gotcha.
And yeah, man, like the second to last day, I actually had three different stalks 40 yards or less and didn't get a shot off.
Oh man.
Yeah.
It's like that. It's archery elk hunting's not easy, you know?
No.
Do you, is that the first time you'd hunted like branch antlered bull with your bow?
No, I mean, I've definitely done it since I think it was 2018 is when I actually first picked up a bow, but I just have ever done OTC tags.
Right.
That's all I've ever done here in Utah. I've never really, oh, well, and Montana. I've only hunted Montana elk once as well.
Gotcha.
But actually my second day ever holding a bow in my hand, I took a shot at a bull in Montana and it was an awful shot. Let's just say that I missed horribly, but I love archery hunting. I wish I would have started so much sooner.
Yeah.
I love archery hunting and even just shooting the bow in general. I find it therapeutic and it's a challenge for yourself to just do better than your last shot.
Yeah.
And I am a competitive person. But I can honestly say shooting the bow, I'm not very competitive just because I feel I can't talk that shit and back it up either. So yeah. I'll do my thing and have fun with it. You right. know?
Yeah. I remember I was kind of following along social media with your hunt as you were posting. And I remember, I think it probably ended, may have been a week or 2 weeks. And I think I remember reading a post where I really felt like you'd really poured your heart into that post. And you basically said, I can't believe that this is over. You know, I waited for this opportunity. And, you know, I think people that would listen to my podcast, I think they probably get it because they're probably a similar frame of mind. And that you're like me, I think you probably look forward to this every single year and you work towards it. Right. And then when you talk about an elk tag in the state of Utah, I mean, I've had three in my life and I've been lucky to have three in my life. I've like really played my cards well, I think. And I'm 45, but reality is I might get one more in my life, like with good health, you know, where I can really get after it hard, maybe two more if I'm super lucky and I'm really old. But those opportunities are really, man, they're really rare. And I know how bad you wanted it. And I remember reading that post and I was like, man, my heart kind of hurts for you, you know?
No, I get you. Well, I appreciate it.
How do you feel post? Because I think everybody measures, there's some part of that you measure your success in a hunt based on, you know, killing an animal.
Yeah. That's our goal. That's what we want to do.
It's the goal. That's why you're out there. Right. Yeah. So where you didn't get one, How do you feel about it? You dive into that, like how you were feeling then and now?
Well, first and foremost, I felt just so bad that I had my buddies out there and they spent their time, their energy, their money, and we didn't get it done. That was like my ultimate number one crusher of life is my buddies were out there grinding it out with me and I wasn't successful at the end of the day, tagging out on a bull. I wasn't successful. And that kind of ate at me honestly for a while. I probably had like 2 week depression where I was just not a fun guy to be around just because I was just kind of just down about it.
Yeah.
And then we did put in so much time scouting and setting cameras and doing all the little things and it is a special place to me. And I've actually been fortunate. I drew out when I was 18 with 0 points and I drew with a rifle. Gotcha. I did actually shoot a 5-point rag on the second last day of the hunt. I shot the wrong bull. I used to wonder how people would say that until it happened to me.
Yep.
And so I know how that is now, but yeah, going back to that and, you know, being away from the family, man, you know, and this is my living. And so I guess I did put a little bit of pressure on myself. I can say that I didn't, but you know, there's pressure on yourself when you do for this sure. for a living that you want to be successful because you want to make a video about it and you want to show the world, you know, like there was a little bit of that where I let myself down in that aspect. But then full circle, it's like, dude, I got everything I wanted out of that hunt. We were in rut fests. We were seeing just bulls go at it. We were watching them rake. We were, you know, and my favorite sound in the whole world is an elk bugle. I like get fired up, bro. For like sure. The hair on the back of my neck stands up. And like, that was my number one hunt that I wanted to just be so successful on in my life, was my first archery limited entry bull elk tag. And yeah, like in the moment, it sucked ass. Like, I'll be honest, like it sucked ass that on that last day when we were packing up and going home and we were empty handed with a bull. And it's just like, mother F, like, yeah. Why? Like, what happened? Did I not have good karma? Like, did I not put out good juju? Like, what did I do wrong? I had all these different questions. Like, maybe we should have bugled more. Maybe we should have went up on this saddle. Like, you know, there was all those questions that you have after the fact. But in the moment, we felt like we were doing what was right. Mm-hmm. In the moment, it's, you know, there's so many emotions that are going along with that. And when you have a bull screaming in your face at 30 yards and you can't see him except for his snout. And it's just like, just step out, you son of a bitch. Like, you got two more yards. Just take two more steps. That's all I need you to do. And when it doesn't happen, it's like, all right, let's reassess. Let's get back out there. But yeah, I spent 18 days on my elk hunt. And to be unsuccessful after 18 days, because you feel, you know, I guess I would pride myself, like, I'm a decent hunter. I'm not a great hunter, but I'm a decent hunter. And I told myself, and I even told my wife, and just being away from them, it was just like, I promise I can get this done. I have plenty of time to get this done.
Yeah.
And that was the other thing too. I'll be honest, dude. As soon as I came home and I saw my wife for the first time and she hugged me, I cried like a little bitch.
Yeah.
I did, nothing, dude. I cried. Nothing, like, nothing I put my head right in her shoulder and her neck, and I just sat there and I cried, and I actually apologized to her. I was like, I'm so sorry that I took that much time away from you guys and I didn't accomplish what I set out to do. So yeah, dude, my first 2 weeks after that hunt, I was a mental case, I guess.
Do you look back on that though and think, cause I've been there. I know exactly the feeling. Like, in my own way, I know it, because I've been there. There's part of me, like, as I listen to you talk though, and as I think about it, I often have the thought, I'm like, man, how cool is it that there is something like that in my life that I care that much about, like that I feel so much passion about, that I want so badly, that I now feel conversely this, you know, this bad, like that it didn't work out the way that I wanted to, you know, like it's just cool that you have something. And I've thought about that a lot. Like how fortunate am I to love something that much, you know, that like I can pour my whole heart and soul into it and it means that much to me.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's helped give me some perspective. You know, just like it puts a little gratitude back in for the experience that it was, you know?
Absolutely. And
the other cool thing is, I mean, I got to watch a lot of your videos, like as you were hunting, you know, and I was living vicariously through you. And it's funny, I mean, you would have probably never known it, but you know, I'm there at home or wherever I was at, just rooting for you. Like, oh man, I hope he gets it done, you know?
I appreciate it.
But totally enjoying also the experiences. And I mean, when those types of hunts, they come along, I mean, just think of all the cool memories that you guys made, you know? And
I've never laughed harder than on that hunt. And just being with people that you trust and people that you love, it's not just a hunt.
For sure. You know? Yeah, absolutely.
It's not just a hunt.
Yeah. And then just the wildlife encounters, right? Mm-hmm. Like getting to be on the hunt. I've told this story before. Hopefully people won't mind me sharing it, but I remember one time my dad, I was rifle hunting. I was with my brother and, you know, there were some spikes that come out and my brother was like, he had a tag and I was like, I'll just shoot one and then I'll go to town and get a tag. Cause I was dumb. I was a young kid. I was like 15, 16. I can't remember. Not very old, but he was like, no, that's not what you pay for. You don't buy the tag or get the tag for the animal. It's not like a one-to-one. So the tag, what that is that's for the experience, whether you get one or not. Mm-hmm. And I try to look at my hunts that way a lot. And, you know, I hope that I think you do too. Looking back on that hunt, probably, you probably looked at it as like, that was the cost of admission for the experiences that I had, that, you know, just, you can't beat those experiences.
No.
Yeah.
But I feel the exact same way with exactly what you're saying. 100%.
Yeah. You, was there anything that you would like, you'll have another elk tag. You'll go archery elk hunting again, right? I almost guarantee you that this year you're probably planning and scheming and trying to put a tag in your pocket to go archery elk hunting. Is there anything that you can think back on that you would do differently?
Bugle.
Really?
I would bugle. Because we were in their bedroom. All we had to do was bugle and piss them off to get them to come out.
Right.
We just went silent. That's all we did. We did cow calls. That's all I did.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I would bugle.
Is it just why didn't you feel like you did? Was it just like a hesitancy, like not confident in your calling, or did you just like feel like you didn't want to blow them out?
No, it was just inexperience calling 100%. Gotcha. I just, honestly, dude, I don't know how to bugle very well. Mm-hmm. And so I was honestly, depending on my buddy Jake and my buddy Jared and my buddy Chad. And I don't know. We just made the agreement. Let's just be stealthy and let's just get in on them. But yes, bugling 100%, I feel could have made a little bit of a difference.
Gotcha. Yeah, it's so hard because there's times where it would have went your way, you know, and you could have slipped in stealthy and cow calls, and it, you know, he slips in and you shoot him and you're like, I've got this figured out.
Well, dude, 7 times under 60 yards, yeah, you'd think you'd have a shot on a bull, you know, just didn't work out in my favor.
I tell you one thing, like the tags I've had in Utah have been like, I've said it in videos that we've done. I always think like, oh, I've got this great tag. It's going to be an easy hunt. And it never is. Like, it's hard. It's hard hunting elk with a bow.
Yeah. And I wouldn't say I ever thought it would be easy, but if you were to ask me before my hunt, oh, I was killing a bull 100%. Like that was 100% in my mind. What was going down? What was happening? I was even like trying to manifest it, envision all this stuff, you know? And just didn't play out.
Do you, how do you feel? So it sounds like you could have shot smaller bulls, right?
Yeah.
Do you wish that you would have, or are you happy that you stuck to your guns?
No, I'm happy I stuck with my guns because we were going after a bigger bull and we were seeing him a lot. So I thought it would just definitely happen. And I mean, we were seeing bulls almost every single day, and bulls that I would be happy putting my tag on. Like I said, I wasn't like necessarily trophy hunting. If I would have had a 320 bull give me a 20 yard shot, guarantee my ass is shooting that bull all day long. Like you just don't pass up that experience, especially if you've never shot an elk with a bow. That would have been just dumb of me.
But, no, I'm glad you stuck to it. It's interesting, like sometimes you set a goal for yourself when you're hunting, and like there's a worse feeling than not getting one, and it's shooting one that you're not happy with.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? There's,
I have to get excited. Yeah. I have to get excited. Cause I know in that moment when I see that animal and I know that split second, you're either dying or just like, nah, he can go.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But if I get that little feeling, that little jolt of like, you know, then it's game on.
Yeah. That's the best.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, I'm going to tell you congrats on a hunt, because I know that you poured your heart and soul into it and you worked your tail off. And I would guarantee you, I don't know your buddies well. I know Jared a little bit, you know, talk to him. I would guarantee you, knowing him the way that I, even just the little bit that I do, like, you know, he considers himself grateful for having the opportunity to go with you. So I think congratulations are in order. I wanted to talk to you about your late season deer hunt, because you shot a really nice buck.
Well, I appreciate it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was cool.
How'd that work out? So you had an archery tag.
I did.
Okay. And then didn't fill it, I would assume. And then did the extended hunt.
Is that how that worked? I actually have the dedicated.
Okay. Gotcha. Yep.
And then, so it went into the extended part of things. So I also film for Hunt Wars TV.
Okay.
It's a TV show. And so I do a lot of filming for them. I used to do some editing for them. But anyway, right after my elk hunt, I went to Oregon to film an elk hunt. Mm-hmm. Came home, went to New Mexico to film an elk hunt, came home, did a deer hunt to film. And then I didn't get home until I think October 30th, something like mm-hmm. that. And from November 1st or October, whatever it was, I spent till November 13th just hunting deer, because that's actually when I shot my buck, was November 13th. Okay. And I just, dude, I was in deer every single day, seen bucks. I actually missed a good buck. I hit a good buck and then killed a good buck. And mm-hmm. what's crazy is I think he's 200 inches. It's just a monster deer. Didn't stop 80 yards. And I was kind of just bumming, heading back up the hill. And my buddy Chad's just waving his arms. He's like, dude, another buck, another buck. And I honestly didn't even know what buck it was. I had mm-hmm. no idea how big he was. I just knew he had a big frame.
Right.
And he honestly kind of walked right up to me. And I shot him at 20 yards. And,
oh, nice.
So, yeah, I made a video about that. And, I mean, I just put in a lot of time. And mm-hmm. I kind of had an idea of what these deer were doing every single night. And yes, there was the rut that was happening and they were rutting in there. So I knew where I wanted to be set up, and they did exactly what I thought they would do. And right. I just got lucky.
How hard is that late hunt? I mean, do you feel like it's pretty challenging? I mean, I can imagine the snow on the ground. It's probably pretty crunchy. How are you getting in range?
Yes, it is definitely, the elk hunt, especially that late extended, dude, that is probably one of the hardest elk hunts you will ever do in your entire life.
Huh.
Just between the weather and just the animals in general. And there are so many people that you're battling against on the Wasatch Front. Like it's a tough hunt. But with deer, it hadn't really snowed all that much.
Mm-hmm.
It was actually pretty dry, and I was able to just cut him off. He was just kind of down in the bottom of a wash and started working right straight to us. And he was almost taking the same path that big deer did beforehand. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of knew where to be set up and ran down the hill. He came out and just happened to get lucky, right place at the right time. And I feel that's what a lot of hunting is, though, is just setting yourself up at the right place at the right time. And do I feel there's a little bit of luck in that? Yes, I do. But it's also you putting in your time, your effort, you're learning these new areas and these animals and stuff. So I feel, yes, there's a little bit of luck, but I also feel you set yourself up to be in that situation.
Got
to
create your luck, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. You said you hit a buck. What?
Yeah.
What? Yeah. And I hate to bring it up, but the only reason I bring it up is because I did too. So I've had a bad year as far as like hitting animals. I went years and years and years and years without any issues whatsoever hitting an animal. And then I've had some situations in the last year and a bit where I've hit some animals and lost them. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you talked about the depression of not filling your tag. I mean, I went into like a full on depression this year, like full on, like legitimately really bad under a similar situation. So I was curious, like what happened? And I've tried to learn from it. So I'm curious as to your situation and what you've kind of learned from it.
So he's a big 4x5, 4-point with a sticker and probably 180 class buck. Dang. Biggest deer like up to that point that I had chased with the bow, really. And they were down in this little sagebrush flat. I was up in these little rolling hills, and I had noticed that they were doing like this kind of loop. So I set myself up about 100 yards away from the bottom of the flat, just up the hill. And dude, sure as shit, they come right through that flat. And they worked their way into a little cut. So I backed out, went all the way up and over, and it took me an hour to go 100 yards. I worked my way into 50 yards. I like kind of peek up I see him, range 50, awesome. I'm getting ready to dial, and I have a lone doe to my right. She gets scared, runs down, bumps those deer. They kind of bound up a little bit. And I'll be honest, I took an 80-yard shot, but I honestly was not shaking, even though it's the biggest buck I had ever shot at. I was not shaking. I was good because I felt like in that hour time frame, I had time to collect myself, because when I was 100 yards away, that's when it hit me, dude. Like, I started shaking and I couldn't control myself. But yeah, I took an 80-yard shot. But as I was doing that, I was just telling myself, hold your shot, hold your shot. And I did. And I honestly didn't even know where my arrow penetrated. I couldn't even tell you. He kind of kicked and then just skirted around and went up and over. Couldn't see him anymore. So I hurried and run down, and it took me a little bit to find my arrow, but found my arrow, full pass through, but very minimal blood. There's some blood on the fletchings and a little bit of meat on the actual broadhead, and really very minimal on the actual arrow itself. And so I thought initially, okay, I thought maybe far back because my other miss that I had was above the deer, which I had the wrong range, but I did notice it was a little bit back. So that's, I just assumed I hit a little bit back, maybe in that dead zone. So, cause it didn't have a lot of blood, but then come to find out, after doing so much searching, I had four other guys come out the next day with me, did a half day. We did not find a speck of blood, even where the arrow was, everything, didn't find a speck of blood. So ultimately I was just thinking, no matter what, I made an awful shot and maybe probably not the most ethical shot that I could have taken at 80 yards. Dumb, but I feel anybody that's in that scenario, you have your biggest buck you've actually ever hunted with a bow. You're feeling pretty confident about yourself, you know, and you're just like, I can get this done, you know, that's what I did.
I'd be curious because I've been there. You almost talk yourself into it because you've probably shot, as I have shot, a lot of arrows at 80 and 100 yards at my local range. And I'm like, you know, I'm pretty good at 80. Like, I'm pretty consistent at 80 yards. And then you get into that hunting situation, you're like, this is a shot that I can make. And in a lot of cases, you probably could, you know, but then when it doesn't go your way, then you start to question whether it's ethical or not. Right.
Yeah.
And it's a game time decision almost. And I've gone back and forth with this same question, like not ethical, you know, it's really hard to paint it with a broad brush and say it was or it wasn't, right? Really, the only person that can answer that is you, for you and how you were feeling in that moment, right? I mean, it's just one of those things. It's hunting, and I've said this a lot lately. Hunting's like messy. It's a messy business, right? It's not black and white. I think you try to do everything that you can, including shooting lots of arrows at, you know, extended distances, to try to be as confident as your equipment as you possibly can be. But like, you know, killing an animal, it's a messy business. Like hunting's not cut and dry, you know?
Well, I feel it's just because it's all individual. It depends on the individual, like how far you can hike, how, you know, how well you can shoot, how much have you been shooting, how much time can you put into this craft to make yourself better?
Yeah.
And so that's why for myself, I say maybe not the most ethical shot, because I do not practice 80 yards a lot. I mean, I do practice, but it's not like every day I'm practicing 80 yards. So that's why I say for myself, yeah, probably not the most ethical shot, but in the moment I'm like, I've made this shot. I've done this. I can do this. And yeah, so
is it changed your mind on taking a shot at that distance in the future, or has it changed how you practice?
I was going to say, I wouldn't say change my mind on taking the shot. It's changed me wanting to practice that shot more often, because if it comes down to that scenario again, I want to be able to, you know, feel confident in my abilities and actually, you know, practice that shot multiple times, multiple days, mm-hmm. and feeling confident in that shot. So I wouldn't say that I would never take that shot again. Mm-hmm. I just want to be better at that shot.
You just want to be more confident.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. It's every situation is different, right? I mean, mm-hmm. and yeah, it's, there's decisions that you make and sometimes they work out and sometimes they don't. And then you try to live with it and figure out how to be better. Yeah. I mean, I shot that buck in Nevada, and ended up not finding him. I hit him low and right. So he was like brisket, you know, like kind of this just in front of the armpit, and, didn't find that buck. And I mean, I've analyzed the hell out of that ever since, you know?
Yeah.
And I look back on that and I think, you know what? He was 62 yards. That's pretty much an effective shot for me. I shoot that all the time. I shoot much further a lot. I don't necessarily think I would do anything different in that scenario.
It looked like a great shot. I've seen the video. Like, yeah, it looked like a great shot.
That's the thing. I mean, other than just shooting more, and I'm kind of like you, you know, I've just committed myself. Like, I'm just going to shoot more. Like, if I've got to shoot more and I've got to shoot, you know, angled shots and from my knees, and I have to do that much more to feel more confident in that moment, then I will do it. You know,
100%.
You just kind of got to commit to what it's going to take. That's a bummer that you, so do you have any idea if that buck made it?
Yeah, he did. Yep.
Yeah.
And that's actually why I shot the deer that I did.
Gotcha.
Because I went 3 days after the fact looking for that buck, because mm-hmm. I told myself I wounded this buck, and that's the type of person I am. Like,
yeah,
if I don't find that buck again, I will fill my tag, and I won't try to go after another mm-hmm. buck until I know what happened.
Yeah.
So yeah, we found out he was still alive, and I actually saw him even after I shot my buck. He's gotcha. Still alive, and then even had confirmation from other people that, cause you know, they see it on my social media platforms. Mm-hmm. They're like, saw that buck on the last day. He's still alive.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah, he's still alive. Yeah.
That's a, it's a little gift, isn't it? To know that mm-hmm. they made it. And man, they're tough animals.
Oh, their will to live, man, is something else. It's yeah. crazy.
Tough suckers. Well, that's cool. That buck that you shot was a great buck.
Dude, well, I appreciate it.
Yeah. You, what'd you do with him? Euro him, mount him?
Yep. Yeah, we're doing a Euro on him. Yep.
That's awesome. Very cool. What have you got planned for this coming year? Anything exciting?
Well, we got Expo coming up. So I'll have a booth out there with Rogue Outdoorsman, Trent. We've done that the last 3 or 4 years, and it's always a good time getting with him and just, you know, everybody that comes out. And I feel, especially like when you're successful and you have a good season, you roll in with a little bit of momentum, you're fired up to be there. Dude, I honestly, for me, I love meeting the people that support the brand. Like that's the first thing I want to do is like shake their hand and just be like, thank you for supporting me. Thank you for buying my gear. Like it's still crazy to me. Like I would say I have imposter syndrome in a sense still, that people spend their hard earned money on my brand. Like it still mind boggles me to this day, but no, I love Expo. And then I do 3 shed hunt giveaways, at the end of March, April, May. So I have those going on. We have Shed and Tell in June. And then, what else we got going on? I'm sure I'll do some tech events and then I'll have my second year of dedicated, deer tag.
Gotcha.
I always get the OTC elk tag here. Mm-hmm. I unfortunately did not get an Arizona tag for the first time in 6 years because it sold out in 17 minutes and I was on the mountain when it happened.
Yep.
But yeah, I do plan on putting in for a few states. Hopefully we can draw some tags, and then depending on what happens there, do some whitetail hunts, do some OTC stuff out there. And
nice.
Yeah. And I actually did shoot a whitetail this year too.
Oh, right.
I went
on
to Pennsylvania and shot a whitetail out there with a couple buddies. And we did a hunt giveaway out there in Pennsylvania. So
nice.
It was a lot of fun.
If you had 30 days a year, your wife was like, all right, Wes, I'm giving you 30 days to hunt or shed hunt. Which one are you picking?
Can I split it?
If you did split it, what would be the ratio?
15-15.
Okay. And let's say that you can't split it. You got to do one or the other. Which one are you picking and why?
Dude, that's so tough. I hate this question. I seriously hate this question. Because one hand, I want to say hunting because I love the meat. I love mm-hmm. elk meat, deer meat, and having that experience. And it, just being a provider. There's something mm-hmm. about being a provider and taking meat home to your family that just does something to my soul. So on one hand, I want to say hunting. But then shed hunting is... Dude, it's just so much freaking fun. Yeah. And I can do it all year long whenever, mm-hmm. well, depending on the state, whenever I want to do it. Sure. So, dude, I don't know. It's hard. I can't answer that question.
I wanted to ask you this. I forgot. How do you feel about shed closures, regulations, rules, permits potentially being talked about?
I hate them.
Really?
Honestly, I hate the shed closures. Don't get me wrong. If it's a bad winter, yeah, shut it mm-hmm. down. But I feel you can't just pick on the shed hunters. I feel if you shut down an area, shut it down to all activities. Because ultimately, if you care about the animals, you don't want bikers, snowmobiles, all that really pushing the animals. Because if we want to get down to the nitty gritty, mm-hmm. there's other, you know, people with other activities that still push animals, not just shed hunters.
Sure.
I also don't like the shed closures because I feel it hurts the honest people. You have a lot of people that go out and poach sheds, and you have someone like me that is the business. Like, dude, my name is everything. So I'm going to follow every law regulation that there is. And I know I have buddies that go out there and pick up sheds before certain dates. And yeah, it sucks, but I have to follow these rules. And I don't feel there's enough officers to enforce certain areas. Mm-hmm. Actually, a lot of the areas, let's be honest about it. And so I feel it just hurts the honest people mm-hmm. at the end of the day. So no, I do not like shed closures.
Do you think if they were to put it into law, and if it were like region-wide versus statewide, and it became the new norm, that you had a shed season, do you think that would be like an okay thing? It would become more normalized. I'm like torn on it because I hear you. Like, I understand it. I find it frustrating that people go out and poach sheds, but then I also find it super frustrating that people poach animals. Right.
Yeah.
I kind of look at those similarly, if you will, one probably being worse than the other, but, I do kind of wish that, I don't know. It might just be I'm getting old and a little bit sentimental. I'm like, I do kind of wish that there was like a time frame, you know, where we could just kind of let them do their thing, get through winter, you know, get to a point where they've kind of moved off of winter range, and then we could go out and pick up antlers, you know. I don't know. Well, it's a hard one for me to work through.
For me, though, if you're a sportsman, a respectful sportsman, mm-hmm. you're going to give the animal space regardless if there's a shed closure or not.
Yeah.
You know? And if people would actually leave the animals alone, you would pick up so many more sheds instead yeah. of like pushing them and, you know, like spacing out their antlers.
Yeah.
So I feel what I wish they could do is no shed law and turn in all the people that are going out after them, you know, like harassing them mm-hmm. and or going in side by sides, running over vegetation and all that. Like, be able to have the public turn those people in and have harsher punishments. I feel if you had a harsher punishment, like take away hunting rights, take away certain things. I feel if you had a harsher punishment, people wouldn't go out as often and poach sheds.
Yeah. I had an experience that kind of changed my opinion a little bit. So one year I went out mid-March and I was looking for elk sheds, and I ended up kind of going up this chute into an area that like I'd picked up sheds before and I worked up on, and I heard an antler hit a rock. Like sound.
Yeah.
You know the sound of
you
an
know
antler.
The sound.
You
yep.
know the sound. Yep. I know you know.
Yeah.
So I heard this, right? And I was like, oh man, I think I might have just heard a bull shed, you know? So I worked up the ridge and I got on these tracks, and, you know, tracks, fresh tracks in the snow, bull tracks. And I kind of come up over the little ridge, little rise, and I look out ahead of me and there's a bull, and he's bedded like 10 yards in front of me. And he is so emaciated, like he can't get up. Like he's just literally tipped over dead. Like still breathing, like real shallow breaths, you know, but like completely emaciated into the hips, the back straps, you know, he still had both antlers, but actually what I'd heard is him actually tipping over, like his actual antlers hitting the ground, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, I felt really bad, but there's really nothing legally I could do, right? It's not like I could kill the animal, but I basically worked out around him, went clear up the ridge, and I came back that evening and checked on him, and he died. But, man, it kind of changed my perspective a little bit on timing, because it's like, and I can't say that, like, unequivocally that, you know, it adds to pressure on those animals, that it like decreases body condition. You know, I can't say, cause I think those animals are pursued year round, right? They're prey, yeah. Right? Yeah. So there's lions, there's bears, there's things that are pursuing animals all the time, but it did kind of change my perspective a little bit. And I wonder if I am doing the right thing by being out here mid March, you know,
mm-hmm.
wandering around.
Seeing for me, I feel it's areas, because you will never catch me hiking in snow. Dude, I hate snow. I just think it's a waste of time to try to find antlers in the snow. Gotcha. I hate it.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess, I don't know, maybe I contradict myself, because I like to go where it's more dry, and mm-hmm. I feel the animals aren't as bad of a state.
I'm
in the wrong for saying that, but to me, they're not spending that extra energy to mm-hmm. find their food, their, you know, to travel or anything like that when it's yeah. drier. So I don't know.
For the record, man, I've done a lot of shed hunting. I'm not saying one way or the other. I think it's an interesting conversation to have, you know, to think about. It'd be interesting to see what they do going forward. You know, if yeah. they do. And I do think there's a part of me that thinks, you know, if it was enacted like region wide, and if it just became the new norm, you know, I think you would still have good shed hunting. It would just be a little bit later than what we're all typically used to, you know?
Yeah.
So it'd be interesting to see kind of how it develops.
But, yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah. Even if they add a fee to it, I don't mm-hmm. mind paying a fee. But I also want to know where that money's going. Like, let's do something productive with it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I don't mind a fee. I'd pay a fee, but then I would also like to see fees enacted on, you know, people that like to go trail running, and people that like to go backpacking, and people that like to ride mountain bikes and snowmobiles,
all that stuff.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, I would like to see them pay some share as well, and figure out yeah. how to do that. But anyway, I've had you for an hour and a half, hour and 20 minutes.
Flew by.
Yeah, hopefully.
No, it did.
No, I appreciate you coming on, kind of telling your story. Tell people where they can find you and what they can do to support you.
So all social media platforms is Rise and Shed, and my website is riseandshed.com. And yeah, we have apparel over there. We have backpacks. We have a t-shirt subscription mm-hmm. and I do a whole bunch of just different kind of stuff. I have brand new things happening all the time with the business, especially with apparel. But yeah, just dude, seriously, thank you. I appreciate it very, very much for having the opportunity for me to come on and share yeah. my story. So thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah. Check out your Rise and Shed YouTube channel. Good channel.
I appreciate it.
I'd like to see it continue to grow, and I like to see good dudes doing cool stuff. And I didn't know that about your backstory, but I really appreciate you telling me that. And I think it's awesome. I think people should support your brand, because I think it's really cool and a good cause to give back.
Well, thank you.
So
appreciate
it. That's awesome. Well, thanks, Wes, man. I appreciate it. And I hope you have a good evening.
Hey, you too.
Yeah. See ya.
We'll see ya.